This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Gustavo Samaria. He's from Argentina. Gustavo, it's great talking to you.
Hello, Robert. How are you? Nice to hear you from Buenos Aires.
Gustavo, you wrote this article, Argentina, a Mirror of Your Future. This was written for the site American Renaissance. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got in touch with the site to write the article?
Well, first of all, I am a former army officer of the Argentine Army. I left the army 20 years ago, and then I did three another careers. I'm professor of social sciences. I have a degree in international relations. And I'm close to finish my career of a degree of law in Buenos Aires. I'm also a businessman, and I wrote a book called Goodbye to Democracy.
Is the book Goodbye to Democracy, is it in Spanish, or is there an English version of it too?
By now it's just in Spanish. I hope someday it will be in English. I get in touch with American Renaissance because the foreword of my book was written by the Dr. Richard Lynn from Ulster University. So he is one of the main researchers in the fields of intelligence all around the world. So I am a follower of his investigations. And I took a lot of his knowledge into my book. So I try to link the importance of intelligence in a population and the the effect of the intelligence, of the average intelligence of the population in the results of the economy and the social life. So that's why I try to link the democracy in Latin America and the level of our civilization and trying to explain most of our failures in relation with our thresholds of intelligence and how the ethnic background of different countries of Latin America impact in today's results, as you can see, and also you can see it in the United States as well.
So your article, you start out with the early history of Argentina, starting with the Spanish colonists. How would you contrast the original colonization going back to, say, the 15 and 1600s to other parts of Latin America when the Spanish colonists came in and conquered the Aztecs in, say, Mexico?
Well, first of all, I would like to make a difference, historical difference, between the circumstances of the New World in hands of the British colonists against to the Spanish conquerors. First of all, the settlement of North America was made under the colonial terms. It means families went abroad from the British island to colonize North America. Meanwhile, in the South, it was a military conquest, and it was also a kind of, I would not say invasion, but it was a military campaign with the hand of the church. You know, the cross and the sword went together to conquer South America. And all the ideas of this time came straight from Spain to Latin America. Mainly the conquest was made by the males alone, not families. That provoked from the first time since Columbus arrived to the La Española island, the mixed with local population, the mestizo, started from the very beginning. And that was not the case in North America, where Americans remained endogamic, to say a word, and they didn't mix, you didn't mix with the Amerindian population. And it was another important point in those years. In South America, there were two great civilizations or two great people, one in Mexico and the other one in Peru. They were the Aztecas in Mexico and the Incas in Peru. That was not the case in North America, where the settlers didn't have to confront or to face big civilizations. So from that point, all the history of both continents, North and South America, were completely different. And I think this history of military conquest mixed with church evangelization plus the phenomenon of the two civilizations in South America that were very strong and in relative terms quite advanced were like a fence against the Spanish. And this was making the form of the Latin Hispano South American culture that was mainly a mixed culture. That was not the case, and it was completely different in the United States.
So what happened with Argentina is you're saying it started out on a similar course as the Spanish colonists coming in and mixing in with the natives, but what really changed the course of the nation was these massive waves of immigration from Europe starting in the 19th century?
Well, that's exactly the point, because Argentina and most of the South American countries became independent from Spain by the beginning of the 19th century. In times of Napoleon, when Napoleon invaded the Iberian Peninsula. So afterward, there was in Argentina a kind of think tank, we would say, or a class of illustrated people called the Generation of the 37, 1837. These thinkers made a very deep analysis of our culture and our history, and they decided to cut off with our very Spanish and conquest heritage. And they saw in immigration a way to transform our reality. They studied, I will remind some names, maybe they are not known for you, but they are very known here, Mr. Sarmiento, Mr. Alberdi. They were great thinkers, and they admired the United States, and they even copied or they inspired our constitution that was promulgated in 1853. And the ideas of the era were to transform our population, and even our population was very little. We were only less than 1 million people in a territory of 2 million square kilometers. So they saw the need for this land to be occupied and to be settled by laboring people, by intelligent people, people with a culture of civilization. And they saw the European immigration as an immediate solution.
Did the president at the time, Nicolas Avellaneda, in the late 1800s, he actually went out of his way to recruit immigrants from Europe?
Yes, the case is, it was a generation, as I told you, of a serial of presidents, starting from Sarmiento, Mitre, Avellaneda, and they were a kind of aristocracy of Argentina, and particularly President Avellaneda impulsed a law called the Colonization and Immigration Law in 1876, with the idea of promoting European immigration. And from then, they were opened in every capital of Europe an office of Argentine delegation to recruit immigrants. And first of all, there was a kind of selective immigration because they prefer people with some qualifications, farmers, people who, artisans, you know, people that bring to Argentina knowledge of how to work the land, because of the pampas here were practically inhabited, and we had one of the more fertile lands of the world, and in those days they were almost a desert. So 6 million people came to Argentina between 1880 and 1920.
Primarily from Spain and Italy, but also Northern Europe as well?
No. Because of the culture, because also of the climate, most of the immigrants came from Italy, Spain, France in third order, British, but in fourth or fifth order, and also Germans. But I would say 80% of the immigration came from Italy and Spain. Because of the language, also the culture, it was very easy for them to adapt to the Argentine weather, to the Argentine idiosyncrasy. And for instance, in the case of the British, they sent very qualified people, few people, but very qualified, mainly engineers, in order to develop companies like the railways here. In a few years, 30,000 miles of railways were established in Argentina, connecting the whole country and conveying all these lines to the port of Buenos Aires in order to export the products of the lands and crops and meat to Europe. So Argentina had the chance to incorporate in the world economy with a very strong product position and trade in very few years. By 1913, Argentina were one of the first GDPs of the world, the sixth position.
And did you have the United States in GDP and per capita income at one point?
No. We never surpassed the United States, but we were ahead of Switzerland, of Norway, of Italy, ahead of Spain, of Japan. of course, the Argentine GDP alone was almost big as the rest of the Latin America, the South American GDP together. So we were 5 times richer than Brazil in those days. Illiteracy was almost vanquished in 3 decades. By 1920, 1930, more than 70% of the Argentine population was literated. Sarmiento, Mr. Sarmiento, who was the Horace Mann of Argentina, who was the developer of the public education in this country, brought 65 American teachers, young ladies from Boston, specially selected by Horace Mann's wife, Mrs. Mary Peabody, who convinced 65 young ladies to come here to the south of the world, to this corner, in order to develop the teaching of teachers. So all teachers of Argentina were initially started by these 65 valiant ladies from America. So we are always in gratitude to the United States for this initial help and impulse.
At what point did Argentina first start to see a decline? Would you say it was around the time of the Great Depression?
Well, this is a matter that is very discussed, and it's not very clear. But we can say, we can assure that the 1930s crisis impacted in Argentina because of the closing of the markets, especially of the Commonwealth, because all the products of Argentina, meat, crops, and products of the land, primary commodities, were all mostly sold to United Kingdom. So after the crisis, United Kingdom closed the markets and established a preference towards the Commonwealth countries. And it was a curiosity that the only country that was not strictly part of the Commonwealth, but it was in economical terms, it was a part of the Commonwealth, was Argentina. So after the 30s, when this closing happened, Argentine government started immediately negotiations with the United Kingdom in order to keep open the selling of Argentine products, especially meat. That finally took place with the Roca-Runciman agreement in 1934, and that gave us the possibility to continue exporting meat to the United Kingdom. But even though the economy of Argentina was in some extent afraid of this new situation, and we, the Argentines, started a cycle of state interventionism. For instance, the rental prices of houses were fixed and frozen by law for several years. The mortgage rates were also extended and reduced compulsory by the government. And it took several measures taken by law, by, for instance, maximum prices and the estatization of the retirement programs that were under individual capitalizations account. They were estatized and they were put under the state control. And several measures like this that took place from the 30s and during the following decades. And Argentina, digamos, was afraid of facing this crisis and postulated the fantasy that with the law, we can force and we can change the reality. So this is one of the reasons that most people can tell you about the decline of Argentina. But there is another concomitant reason that I think it was the stop of the European immigration and a deep change in our demographic shape. I mean, the last cohorts of Europeans stopped in the 30s, and in this process I was telling you, Argentina started to substitute import goods by trying to start a local industrialization. And that provoked the internal migration of people from the provinces of the north of the country that were mostly mestizo people.
We're not talking about immigrants from other countries. You're talking about the original population moving from the countries into the cities.
Because it was a dual process. In the same time, an internal migration process from the north provinces of the country, and also from the neighboring countries, Bolivia, Chile, Peru, Paraguay. Mestizo people from all these neighboring countries started to come to Argentina, to the main cities, especially Buenos Aires, conforming the step by step, year by year, very slowly, a belt of poverty surrounding the main cities, especially the city of Buenos Aires. And what happened? These people had frequency of birth very high or higher than the Europeans. So they were prolific. In the meantime, Europeans declined in their children. And for instance, we the Europeans have from those days 1, 2, 3 children, and we start procreation at 25, 30, 35 along the time, while the mestizo people start maybe at 16, 17, 18. So when they get 30, 35 years old, they are a grandparent. So in the same lapse of time, these mestizo people have the possibility of double us in population. So this happened from the 30s up to the 90s, slowly. But from 90s on, there was a very strong process and very fast process of a new wave of immigrants from neighboring countries. And I'm talking about several millions, taking into account that Argentina has 45 million inhabitants, and today more than 10% are foreign born. And unfortunately, there is no official and reliable statistics. So most of the calculations are made upon empirical appreciation, estimations, and from different sources.
What have been some of your observations on the effects that it's had, that these demographic trends have had on Argentina from your observations and in recent years?
Well, look, almost 5 million people live here in shanty towns, okay? 75% of those people living in shanty towns are foreign born. Crime rate has increased dramatically since the 90s. I can tell you how Argentina was when I was a child. I am 45 years old. It was a peaceful country. People, children played in the streets. There was no robberies. There was no demonstrations in the streets. There was no poverty. Poverty rate in the 70s was less than 4% of the population. And now we have 35% of the population under the poverty line. That give you a measure and an image of the profound change. And this decline of the population took faster way during the last decade with the proliferation of gated communities. There are Buenos Aires in the surrounding areas in the outskirts of the city. It is plenty. There are more than 600 gated communities. And gated communities are mainly occupied or completely occupied by middle and upper class people afraid of the insecurity and safety. So they gather together in these walled cities in order to prevent crime against them. And even people that live in these gated communities are victims of crimes in a less rate, of course, than people living outside. But even then are victims, because crime rate in Argentina is dramatic and you cannot feel safe anywhere. People in the houses, they communicate by WhatsApp change all the time in order to see what's going on in the street. Who is this guy that we don't know that is walking around the block? Please call the police. Or what happened? You can be surprised by the middle of the night with a phone call of your neighbor that is suffering an intrusion in his home. And I was a victim several times of these events myself, as everywhere in Argentina, everybody in Argentina. So this generates a feeling of fear, and it turns life uncomfortable, because we have a comparison with ourselves 30 years ago. So every Argentinian who has more than 30 or 35 years old can compare this actual situation with the previous days, with 20, 30 years ago. And when you make this comparison, you see how the decline, how deep the decline was, and how our way of life has completely changed.
What have been some of the effects on infrastructure, from the healthcare system, from hospitals to police and prisons?
Well, that is also dramatic. I tell you what's going on. When you pay taxes in Argentina, if you belong to the middle class, you are paying double. You pay taxes for public health care, but you don't use it. You need also to pay a Medicare, a private Medicare. When you pay taxes for the police, you don't use it. You need also to pay for private security. So when you pay taxes for public education, you don't use it. You go and pay again for private education, for private schools. Because all this public infrastructure is completely dedicated and addressed to underclass people and to foreign people. For instance, public hospitals in Buenos Aires are, in some months of the year, completely fully booked by people from Paraguay. So there are, listen to this because this is very curious, there are travel agencies in Paraguay, they organize health tours to Buenos Aires. So they bring people by bus from Paraguay to Buenos Aires with all arrangements made in advance, in order to take these people to several hospitals of Buenos Aires to treat their health problems, even very expensive treatments that are completely impossible in Paraguay, because in Paraguay there is no public health, so if you don't have money, you will not have hospitals, you will not have medics. So people in Paraguay, when get ill, they have to sell their houses to treat their illness. Instead of Argentina, where it's completely free. So you can have the most powerful cancer or the most difficult terminal illness, and Buenos Aires and Argentina's public hospital will treat you completely free of charge. No matter if you come from Paraguay or from the United States or from China, you will have completely free of charge treatment. So these people come to Buenos Aires and they block out our hospitals, and you have to postpone your turn because you will not find available turns to be attended, because this is fully booked for Paraguayan people. So this infrastructure decline is really dramatic. Public hospitals in Argentina look like African hospitals. They lack the minimal elements for doctors to give adequate, appropriate attention for people. And the same happened with the police, the same happened with education. It is almost the same problem. Public schools are really deplorable. You can see the PISA test results of Argentina, and Argentina, one of the main countries of the world to bankish illiteracy, now we are in the 65th position in the PISA ranking, which is really a shame. That is a thing unthinkable for us.
Is there still a strong middle class within Buenos Aires, or has most of the middle class been pushed out and you just have all the ultra-wealthy and a large underclass? That's obviously the case in places like Mexico City, and that's been the trend in major American cities like Los Angeles.
Listen, 30 years ago, when Argentina was 90% of the population of middle class. That is not the figure today. Middle class in Argentina is it is not related strictly with the incomes. It's mostly a kind of cultural preservation of people. They resist in the middle class. They refused to fall into the standard of living of the underclass. But every resistance has a limit. This limit is imposed by reality. So every year after year, most middle class people descend into underclass, unfortunately. They try to keep their education, they try to keep their customs, but that is, an effort limited in time. Maybe you can do it for you and perhaps for your children, but the children of your children, unfortunately, will be mixed in this underclass culture, and it marks the declination of the country. So there is no a clear figure of how much of the population is still in the middle class. But I would say no more than 40-50% of the country belong to the middle class today in economical terms. Just to give you an idea, 50% of the labor force has a salary of $500 a month. It means $6,000 per year. That gives you an idea that if 50% of the labor force is in this standard of income, how you can see if they are, or you can see if they are not, if they are or not still in the middle class.
As far as immigration trends go, is the main problem is the lack of enforcement, or are there a political special interest pushing for the massive immigration from neighboring countries similar to United States? And if so, is it more the left or is it more the corporate interests that are pushing for it?
Well, during the last decade, from 2003 onwards, since the government of Mr. and Mrs. Kirchner, they were promoters of neighbor countries' immigration, because they knew that there was a rapid solution to get more votes, a fast way to incorporate people in their political party. So it was a deliberated policy to free and to open the borders for everywhere coming from the neighboring countries. They promoted a law called Big Homeland, which in Spanish is Patria Grande. Big Homeland law, it was like a waiver for all immigrants in Argentina to be legalized from overnight. And in just a matter of 1 or 2 months, 500,000 illegal immigrants became legal because of this law. And that encouraged their relatives to come, because given this law, there was not a necessity to demonstrate or to prove means of life. So everyone from neighboring countries was allowed to come to Argentina to establish here just by a bona fide form, declaration of goodwill, and they had not to show a criminal background from their countries, but nor any other justification of their way of living, of their origin. That means that the immigration was completely free and out of control.
What is the situation under the current president, Macri? I've heard he's cracked down to some degree.
Well, Mr. Macri issued an executive order to reinforce, in some extent, this uncontrolled policy. by asking immigrants to show and to prove criminal records before to come to Argentina, and to make faster the procedure to repatriate criminals, foreign criminals in Argentina once they are detected, or even when they are caught or processed by a criminal behavior. But as a matter of fact, I would say the left in this country is very strong, and they made a big confrontation against this executive order. So in practical terms, I would say we have no results yet. It was just a paper, but migration authority didn't show results about how they are controlling and managing this uncontrolled migration situation. Maybe in the future, in the next year, I hope we can see some results, but not yet.
What are your thoughts on the situation in the United States? You've written about a lot of the different parallels. Have you spent a significant time in the United States, and do you see the United States heading in the same direction?
Well, yes, I visited many times in the United States and studied about the process you are experiencing. And I would say there are a lot of similarities. And you are in the same way that Argentina was at the beginning of the 90s, when the pressure of immigration was still not like today. Today, more than 40% of the Argentine population is non-white. Meanwhile, in the United States, Hispanic population is around 17%. So that's why the title of my article was A Mirror of Your Future, because if you don't turn your direction in time, and I think you are still in time to do it, you will follow our steps, and in the next 10 or 20 years, or maybe less, you will be in a situation like Argentina is today. But I would say also in your favor that you still have an advantage. You can preserve, and you must educate the immigrants in the ideas of freedom and in the ideas of capitalism. And unfortunately, Argentina abandoned the ideas of liberty, of freedom, and capitalism since the crisis of the 30s, as I previously told you. So, this force of capitalism that is very strong yet in the United States is the table of salvation in this case of immigration, if you consistently have the opportunity and have the decision to stop now the immigrants and introduce and educate all the immigrants, Hispano immigrants you have, into the capitalism ideas. Otherwise, you will have, unfortunately, the same fate of Argentina. I'm sorry to say that, but it is very realistic. So keep in mind this, you are still in time, and you have a strong philosophy of capitalism that was lost, unfortunately, in Argentina several decades ago.
Well, in the United States, we have the same thing where the Democratic Party supports the policies because they want to import new voters. But as far as economics go, the business interests, they want massive levels of immigration as a way to bring in cheap labor?
Well, I think that is a fantasy, and that is a way to conceal political power. Because when you import immigrants, you are not only importing labor force, you are importing a culture as well. And this has a very deep impact in the receiving country population and culture. And if you want it or not, this impact has, as a result, a change in the standard of living of the whole population. Listen, there are two ways of incorporation for an immigrant, a massive immigrant people. One is the assimilation, and the other one is the multiculturalism. Assimilation is the way that Argentina established in the beginning, at the beginning of the 20th century, when European immigration came. So we blanked the past of these immigrants, and we gave them a new future, a new culture, a new language, a new education. And that was the very important role of Mr. Sarmiento as the great educator in Argentina. And the other way is the multiculturalism. Multiculturalism means that two different cultures can coexist together, keeping their own values and keeping their own ways of life at the same time. And that is an error that Europe is now paying, that Argentina is paying, and that the United States will pay in the future if you don't assimilate completely your Hispano immigrants.
One other trend you pointed to in the article is you said that the culture is changing, where traditional Argentine culture, such as the tango, is being replaced by a foreign culture like cumbia. I think that's Colombian.
Yes, because as I was telling you, the the impact of immigration is slow, and sometimes you don't notice, but it goes day by day. So it changed the culture, but that it means that changed the food, the music, the way of dressing, the way of talking, the way of interacting of people, even in the streets. So once you are aware of the change, it is too late. So for instance, Argentina used to have the tango music, and even during the 60s and 70s, the Argentine rock music. So now the most popular music in Argentina is, as you correctly said, cumbia, which is a rhythm from Central America, Colombia, Venezuela. It is not Peru. It is not an Argentinian.
So you're not saying it's not so much the music of the immigrants themselves, but it's popular among young Argentines.
Yes, because even the young Argentines, European Argentines, started to interact with this new culture. You cannot avoid it. So when young people go to a party, they listen international music, but they listen every time with more frequency this Latin American music that is not original from our country. And I don't have anything against this music. Maybe it should be a nice music. I don't care about that. I mean the what is behind the scenery, you know, what this in fact means about the impact in the culture of a civilization and how it changed step by step, day by day, the profound roots of a civilization and how it finally changes your way of thinking. And you, even when you don't want, you are finally mixed in a different conception of life, in a different cosmovision. And this is very, very difficult to resist. And I want to resist. I want my family to resist. And there are many people in Argentina resisting these changes. But I cannot be very optimistic about the future.
What are some of your thoughts on the architecture of Buenos Aires? It was originally called the Paris of South America, and a lot of architecture was built in the early 20th century. Can you comment on that?
Yes. By the beginning of the 20th century, Argentina, as we spoke, was one of the richest countries of the world. So aristocracy families of Argentina liked very much the French architecture. So they started to import French architects in order to build big palaces in the most beautiful areas of the Buenos Aires city. Many, many of these buildings and these mansions and palaces are still on feet, so you can admire them. They are wonderful, in some cases even nicer than the very Parisian mansions. So because of the lack of local artisans, not only the architects came from Paris, but also the artisans and the labor force, and even the materials. So you know what people in those days did? They sent the ships with meat, and the ships, in order to don't come back empty, they availed of this second length of the trip in order to fill those ships with materials to build these wonderful palaces in Buenos Aires. So, furnitures, vitros, floors, ceilings, paintings, artworks were brought by ship from Europe in the same ship they exported meat. So even when you walk in some areas of Buenos Aires today, you can see the hands of these artisans, and you can see the magnificence of these wonderful buildings. One of them, for instance, is the embassy of the United States, which is placed in the old Bosch Palace, which is an incredible mansion with a lot of art inside, with statues, with fountains, with ceilings, with paintings, with original furniture that was bought by the United States to the descendants of the original owners, the Bosch family in Buenos Aires. Even the French embassy in Buenos Aires is another excellent and magnificent palace of French style. The Brazilian embassy as well. Well, there are at least more than 30 monumental palaces that are still are still in very good state of conservation in the center of Buenos Aires.
Did Buenos Aires have one of the earliest major subway systems? I mean, I think the London Underground was built much earlier, but was it the subway system built earlier than New York's?
Well, the subway system in Buenos Aires was opened in 1913 and was built by the Trolley Company of England. So it was at the same time of the of many of the Paris and I also think in New York and San Francisco or Chicago, I don't remember, they were built at almost the same time. And even the Harrods House from London opened its first branch office outside, and the unique branch office outside the United Kingdom in Buenos Aires in 1914.
What are your thoughts on the Art Deco Cavana building? I think it originally was the tallest tower in Argentina for a long time.
Yes, Cavana building, it was built in 1934 by a rich family, the Cavana family. It has 120 meters high. And it's very impressive. It's a national historical monument. It was declared some years ago in order to preserve it for the future. It had the first central air conditioning system provided by Carrier from the United States in whole Argentina. Even the elevators and the and even there is a curiosity, because even today when you go to the Cabana building to visit a resident, you have to announce in the base floor and the concierge will call by phone to the resident in order to announce you. So it is a curiosity that came from the first time of the Cabanac. And listen, it is the best exponent of the Art Deco in Argentina, and it was also recognized by even in the United States as one of the best exponents of the Art Deco all over the world.
What do you think about the Galleria Pacifico? I think it was originally built, but it was refurbished more recently into a shopping center. But that looks pretty spectacular.
Galleria Pacifico was built by the beginning of the 20th century.
Was it inspired by the Galleria Emanuele Vittorio in Milan?
Yes. The Milano Vittorio Emanuele Gallery was the inspiration of this Galleria Pacifico. They are really magnificent. They are in the very center of Buenos Aires, over the Cordoba Avenue, and it occupies almost a complete block. It has several floors, and most of the international and national brands are placed there, with very nice shops. It is a shopping center with with restaurants, a high class place, and architecture. It has a very nice paintings fresco, did by one of the most important painters of Argentina called Berni. And you can admire them in the walls and even in the ceiling. It was a place, an amazing shopping center.
There's a major street there, Lavage Street. And looking at the photographs, you do see a lot of older neon signage from the Art Deco era to the 50s and 60s. How much of that original signage remains?
Most of them might be original, yes, the neon signs. Lavalle Street is also in the very center. It's a pedestrian street. And in this street are located most of the cinema halls of Buenos Aires. And it's a very commercial street with a lot of activity during the day. You can see a lot of people, plenty of people, local and tourists, going from one side to the other. And regarding the neon, they started in the 60s and they were very popular in the 70s. And we still have many of them lighting during the night in Lavalle Street and even in Corrientes Avenue, which is a parallel one street away.
As far as economic policies go, it does seem to be the trend in South America has been this kind of a fluctuation between either you either get a full-on socialism or you seem to get a robber baron style capitalism where the rich, it's a kind of the rich take it all and you have a extreme oligarchy. Why do you think Latin America has a struggle to find a good balance on economics? Do you tie that primarily to the demographics of the country, or are there other factors? Well, there's been the struggle to have this balance between the two.
Well, in the case of Latin America, you can see that capitalism is has failed along the years. You know, unfortunately, we were not able to adapt and to adopt the standards of capitalism, and we even didn't understand the principles of capitalism. So even in European countries like Argentina or Brazil, and even Uruguay, capitalism is weak. The idea that the state can solve the problems is very extended in the population, unfortunately. So that's why you can see these fluctuations from one side to the other. So in the future, I'm not optimistic about that free enterprise and a minimal state will be the rule in these latitudes. On the contrary, I would say as long as demographic change goes on and as long as mestizo and Amerindian culture gets stronger, capitalism will withdraw year by year. Maybe you will have some springtime like the one we are having today with Mr. Macri presidency, but I think it will not last the enough time to change the mentality of people and to make them see that the solution for all economical problems in Latin America are in adopting the principles of capitalism.
So, what do you think about the economic policies of Juan Perón? I've heard his policies described as a third way in between capitalism and socialism.
Well, I think that the third way of Perón was in political terms, which means he was against the capitalism, but also against communism. But he was a promoter of statism. So the very idea of Peronism, of Peronismo, is the role of the state, which is in similar terms the same idea of communist, of fascist, and of Nazis. So as long as Perón was a promoter of the role of the state in the economy, he had no difference between his ideas and the others I mentioned before. So, but in political terms, yes, I have to recognize that he postponed and he was like a fence against the communism in Argentina. Perón was enemy of capitalism, he was an enemy of the United States, but he was also an enemy of the communism. And that's where I see the real third way of Perón. And you can remember the historical dispute between General Perón and Sproul Braeden, the ambassador of the United States in Argentina in 1946, before the general elections that gave the presidency to General Perón. And he, in those days, Sproul Braeden, the ambassador of the United States, promoted openly an opposition to the General Perón movement because he thought that Perón was fascist and that Perón was receiving the Nazis and the fascists that escaped from Europe through Spain, and that was a historical fact that many of them came to Argentina and were protected by Perón, and that is why Sproul Braeden took this open intervention in the Argentine political arena in 1946. Until Perón, who was a very clever man, saw the opportunity to oppose Sproul Braeden before the elections with the consign of Braeden or Perón. So he established his political campaign with this motto, Braeden or Perón, and he won the election finally.
Gustavo Samaria, it has been an excellent show. I'd like to thank you for being on.
I thank you very much for your invitation, and I am at your disposal anytime.